the wonders we have made. But the union makes us strong.
Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Yo, what's good, New York? You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI, a listener-funded radio station, 99.5 FM. We're the show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, and today we'll be covering the headlines with a socialist analysis, and then we'll be talking about the Democratic Socialists of America. What is our organization? How are we run? And what is our internal democratic structure? In the studio, we'll have Bianca Cunningham, one of the democratically elected co-chairs on the NYC DSA steering committee. And then we'll be speaking with Annie Shields from the Bronx Upper Manhattan branch of NYC DSA. And then afterwards, we'll be going to a pre-recorded interview with DSA member Justin Charles from North Brooklyn. As always, the last quarter of the show is dedicated to you, the audience, to hear your perspective on the fight for socialism in New York City. But now let's go to the headlines.
Special election for NYC public advocate is today. Despite what you may have heard, NYC DSA has not endorsed any candidate in the race. In other election news, public defender Tiffany Caban, a DSA endorsed candidate running for district attorney in Queens, is mobilizing grassroots activists for people-powered reform and justice for all. DSA will be petitioning for her campaign this Saturday in Jackson Heights at 1 p.m. More information about the campaign is available at cabanforqueens.com. or on NYC DSA's Twitter account, at NYC DSA. While community organizers celebrated the Amazon HQ2 pullout, Cuomo declared it constituted the greatest tragedy I've seen since I've been in politics. He has been in politics for at least 30 years, a span of time that includes 9/11, the 2008 economic collapse, and Hurricane Sandy. Millions of Americans are locked in cages, but let's pour one out for the grief-stricken Amazon Cuomo. For more updates about New York City politics, visit thethorn.nyc. In national news, the strike wave continues to spread. Oakland public school teachers have been on strike since last Thursday. They have been joined by Oakland charter school teachers engaging in a wildcat strike. Teachers at one San Francisco school staged a sick out in solidarity. Also, teachers at the Summit Academy in Cleveland remain on strike. Sex workers in Los Angeles staged a wildcat strike this past Saturday. They're protesting wage theft and demanding a union. The largest manufacturing strike of the Trump era began today. 1,700 UE union members walked out in Erie to protest union busting and a 35% wage cut. Solidarity to all the workers of the world.
And you're back with me, even though that was just me. Today we're going to start off by talking with Bianca and Annie about why they got involved with the Democratic Socialists of America, what kind of work they're engaged in and why internal democracy is so important to the organization. Annie, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can. Hello.
All right, great. Bianca, do you want to start off and like how you got involved in the socialist movement and why you ended up joining the Democratic Socialists of America?
Sure, thanks. So how I first got involved, my story starts in 2014. I was working for a retail store and decided to organize to join a union with my coworkers. I ended up getting fired for that organizing, and the union took me in as an organizer in the district for CWA. Once I got into CWA, I was surrounded by other kind of like lefty people in the labor movement that took me under their wing, most notably the first co-chair of New York City DSA, Zelig Stern. I remember being in the office, and we had been doing like knocking a lot of doors for Bernie, doing this project called Project for Working Class Power, which was like a reading group for union members and other folks to come and talk about capitalism. And we were all kind of like hitting the wall, wondering like what's going to be next. And so a couple comrades reached out to the Democratic Socialists of America and said, you know, we have a pretty defunct chapter here, but we'd like to revive it and start to do our activism underneath this work with the goal of like capturing that excitement that came from the first Bernie run. Together, the comrades, it was CWA, Communication Workers of America, along with some NYSNO workers, New York State Nurses Association workers, decided to build out the what we know now as like the labor branch, which was for people involved in the labor movement who had left-leaning politics. And at the same time, our other comrades that weren't involved in the labor movement started the first Brooklyn branch of the Democratic Socialists of America.
That sounds awesome. Annie, would you like to dive into that, your own experience in getting involved in socialism?
Yeah, definitely. So my experience is a little bit different, but it did also sort of start with the labor action. But I was much younger. I was in high school, and I worked at the grocery store when I was in high school for a part-time job. And during that time, the workers at my grocery store went on strike. So that was my first exposure to the labor movement and what solidarity means. And I was really, it made a big impression on me. So growing up from a young age, I sort of absorbed those values of, solidarity with the working class and fighting for your fair wages and good treatment. So years later, I found myself working at a sort of liberal magazine, again in a union. And I was always very sympathetic to democratic socialism. I think I identified with it sort of ideologically, but it wasn't until the presidential election when Donald Trump won that I was really inspired to finally pull the trigger and, you know, pay my dues and join DSA. So I live in Washington Heights, and right around February of, I think, 2 years ago, we started the Bronx Upper Manhattan branch, which was really exciting, and that was my first exposure to the organization, you know, on a direct interpersonal level. And I've been a member since, you know, that first meeting. So about 2 years now, actually, I guess their 2-year anniversary tonight. We have another branch meeting coming up. But yeah, I came to DSA because, you know, once I saw the outcome of the election, I really thought, you know, anything must be possible. Everything I used to believe about politics and about what was, you know, acceptable, what was normal, what was possible is sort of turned upside down. So there's really no alternative other than to try to join the fight for these political values.
Yeah, I feel like both of you guys are kind of identifying a theme that I've seen just with talking with comrades in DSA over time, or maybe not even just people in DSA, but people have kind of been activated by the 2016 election, is that they've had these personal experiences of like facing exploitation in the workplace or dealing with like the white supremacy of the state, just encountering these kind of issues in a personal way. And then at the same time, either being part of or seeing the broader social struggles of the past decade, whether that's the Bernie campaign or you have Black Lives Matter, you have the emergence now of these teacher strikes. So there's kind of this interaction between both the personal experience of suffering under capitalism and then seeing that there is this possible alternative that is about engaging in collective struggle to build something better. Is that an accurate picture that I'm painting of you guys?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
Yeah, same. I think for me, it was just like the desire for democracy. I mean, so much of what we were facing on the job was like wanting a union to come in so that, you know, what do you say? Your voice is going to be heard on the job. And once we experienced that type, like having a voice on the job, I think it just really made me push further and say, like, what could be possible if we had democracy in all areas of life?
Yeah, like it highlighted that there wasn't democracy in the workplace. And then once you started to have that, you're like, wow, this is so much better being empowered in your actual life rather than just like abstractly voting. Not that voting is important and it's great that we have that, But if it's the only thing that you're doing democratically, then your society isn't really democratic. So, you've talked about how you got involved in DSA, but what's your experience been like in the organization, and what kind of work are you primarily engaged in? Annie, if you want to kick it off.
Sure. So about 2 years ago, a few months after the first Bronx Upper Manhattan branch meeting, I met a lot of people. That was sort of my first thing, just getting to know people and figuring out, you know, what everybody was working on and sort of building something from scratch up here. And one of the first meetings I went to was the electoral working group meeting, because I thought, you know, there's all these working groups, I might as well pick one. I came here because of an election. Let's see what's going on with that group. So it kind of got a bit of a false start and needed some, you know, some new folks to sort of take it over after the first meeting and try to kind of get it off the ground. So the co-chair of the branch at the time asked me and another comrade to work on that. So that was like my first kind of project. And I learned a lot during that, you know, period. I didn't know anything about very little about local politics, even less about city council and all the sort of things that we were focused on. So it was definitely a crash course in electoral politics in New York City. But that was a great experience. And then we had a co-chair of the branch, Ravi Ahmad, who is now one of the members of the National Political Committee. She was elected at the convention, and so she had to step down from our branch to take on that role. And so somebody needed to run to fill her seat, so I did that. And then I became the co-chair of the branch. And now I've retired from that, so I'm just kind of doing sort of ad hoc things that help support the branch, but I'm also a member of the Citywide Leadership Committee now.
All right, great. Bianca, what about yourself?
Yeah, for me, it's a little different. I mean, I would just say shout out to all the amazing DSA organizers, because they really organized me so well. I mean, if you look at the steps that they took from like happening to being there, helping us to form a union and get that done. And then from there, they would invite my coworkers and I to like Black Lives Matter rallies, because they know that that was like that was the thing that we cared about. Right. And so they recognized that and started like, you know, having us come out to those types of marches, which was like completely transformational for all of us to be a part of something so powerful and something so large and something that spoke to us in such a personal way. And from there, when we decided to form the labor branch, I remember comrades coming up to me and saying, you know, you're the best option to be the chair of this thing. And I was like, I didn't even know what that meant at the time. It was kind of just like, oh, okay, because this left thing was just like all new to me. So I became the chair of a labor branch, and I did that for 2 years. Over the course of those 2 years, I also was doing training in my union job, like training for union members. And so they tapped me to be on the national training team for DSA. And that was really cool to get to travel everywhere and see comrades from across the country and like partake in like skills trainings and organizing trainings and really like think through a lot of these issues, you know, together, collaboratively, democratically, right? And then from there, I was also involved in like the racial justice working group. At the time, we were working on passing the Right to Know Act. I ended up being elected by default, just because a lot of the leadership there left for a lot of reasons. And so I stepped up to be also the chair of the racial justice working group. I did that. And then from there, I started to, through that racial justice work, really cultivate a lot of relationships in DSA, as well as like with the community broadly, because we were in coalition with Communities United for Police Reform, which is an umbrella for like a ton of organizations that do police reform work. And so from there, I decided that we needed an Afro-Socialist and Socialist of Color caucus, a space for comrades, POC comrades and Black comrades to come together to kind of like share space in a safe way and talk about their own experiences. And so that kicked off 2 years ago. And now I am the chair of the chapter of New York City DSA. And it's been an experience for sure.
What does that mean for people who are less familiar with DSA, being one of the co-chairs on the steering committee?
Yeah, I think being one of the co-chairs means that I have a headache. that it's my job to just be the spokesperson. So we have an amazing media working group who writes sound bites and tells me to say things, and I say the things that they tell me to say. Show up in spaces and try to work in coalition with people and build relationships. And really, more than anything, show up at meetings and really hear from members and figure out ways that we can support the work that's being done.
I think something that you guys are both highlighting is how DSA is a place, one, where people can plug in and get to work on things that they are passionate about. Since it's a volunteer-based organization, this is really key because you can't just send out people to do things they don't want to do. But also another thing is how being part of the organization is a process of like political education in of itself. Like, for example, for myself, before joining DSA, I was like very clear that there were all these bad things that were going on. There was the war on terror, and like the war in Iraq was like a very radicalizing experience for me, and the 2008 financial crisis, and kind of the hope that Obama seemed to offer and then didn't deliver on any of the promises, and that things were actually getting worse and worse and worse. But at the same time, there was all these amazing struggles going on, like the water protectors at Standing Rock and Black Lives Matter. And like there was the Chicago teacher strike in 2012. But I didn't really have like a synthesis to bring it all together. But engaging in DSA and working with all these great comrades and kind of engaging this collective struggle has really like shifted my perspective and broadened my analysis, that it's like this is the way coming together and working together with people and fighting for change collectively is the best way to deliver real gains for working people, not just in this country, but all across the world.
Definitely. And I think there's something to be said for like the fact that we're an all volunteer organization. I always say that everybody has their entry point into the movement. They have that one thing that they care about. For me, it was Black Lives Matter. But I think it's like amazing that everybody in DSA has come to this work through some sort of personal experience and understanding that things need to change. And so that type of commitment you can't get from paid staff, right? And that's what makes us special. We're small, scrappy, and we really believe in the things that we talk about.
Annie, you were talking before about your experience when you were younger organizing, but you're also a union member now, correct?
Yes, I am. Really fortunate to be.
And this, does this also like add to your perspective and like the why organizing democratically is really critical?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm a member of the News Guild, which is one of the unions that represents newspaper. It started out Newspaper Guild, now it's just news for obvious reasons. And we have tons of shops across the country. And just recently, BuzzFeed, the latest example, BuzzFeed News, has joined the News Guild. So it's a really exciting time. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, my first job in media, so I graduated from college and got an internship at a magazine in Los Angeles, an old feminist magazine, that I was very excited about. And I took an unpaid internship, which was a huge strain. I had to live with a family friend and take care of their kid and dog and, you know, do all this other stuff to sort of afford it. And I wasn't being paid, as I said. So, you know, I just thought I was so lucky. And over time, I realized that I wasn't actually that lucky, that they were just, you know, I thought it was special to have gotten this internship. And I was sort of realized that I was being exploited, you know. I finally was hired on, you know, month to month, and eventually given a salary to stay on for about a year. And it just was a really demoralizing experience to have your first job be at a place where you're not really paid enough to live really, you know, comfortably at all. We weren't treated really very well. We weren't given respect. We didn't have much control over our work. Very alienated from our work. And I had a friend in the media industry on the left who told me, you know, you should form a union. And I said, oh, that's crazy. Are you, like, I don't know how to do that. That's, you know, please. And she said, no, really, what are they going to say? You know, the board can't reject that. Everybody there is supposed to be on the left. And, you know, I considered it, you know, but I didn't think it was possible. So, you know, I eventually left there, and I didn't try to form a union, which is one of my big regrets. But having gone from there to a job now where I am in a union, I have had these protections from the, you know, first day that I walked in the door, you know, decent wages, yearly raises, health care benefits that are, you know, very, very good, time off, and a culture that really supports people's lifestyles and their work-life balance. You know, I feel sort of like very fortunate and almost like I sort of need to do something to pay back that, because I didn't have to organize that union. It was there when I got there. So I really owe a lot to the people before me who put in the work to create, you know, created the shop and kept that solidarity going. So part of that for me is trying to support other organizing shops in the industry that I work in, which is a huge trend that we're seeing. And, you know, the media industry is undergoing huge shifts. And it's really necessary, I think, for folks to start asserting their basic rights in the workplace, like Bianca was saying.
Yeah, it's really encouraging seeing the organizing that's going on within media workers, because media workers have a different sort of power. I mean, there are other jobs that have this where they can also be messengers for the empowerment that they're experiencing by collectively organizing together. So it's sort of a duality where it's you're both organizing your workplace and you're empowering yourself there, but then you can spread the message and kind of raise class consciousness through your position in the media. We just have to jump to our interview with Justin, but we'll be back with Bianca and Annie after this interview. But here is Justin Charles, a member of DSA in the North Brooklyn chapter.
How's it going, everybody? This is Jack. I'm here with Justin Charles, a member of DSA and a great organizer, here to talk about internal democracy within DSA, his organizing experience, and why he is involved in the socialist movement.
The first meeting that I went to was the travel ban. The travel ban happened, and then that week after, there was a big Brooklyn meeting. This was before Brooklyn was split up into three branches. So there was like, you know, like hundreds of people there. It was pretty overwhelming, you know, seeing that many people, and inspiring to see that many people were like in a room, you know, for democratic socialism. So went to that, and I was like, this is something, you know. And then I just kind of dove in, which is, for me, the thing that's really interesting about this organization is that you can kind of, if you want to, you can jump in. Day one, you can be like meaningfully participating, you know, in this organization and how things are working, how things get done. I started working on a candidate recruitment committee for people that were looking for city council candidates. A couple people were on those lists that we now know pretty well, you know, Jabari Brisport and Cutter Elliott team. It was cool to have been there, you know, for that. And since then I've done a lot of different things throughout the organization. You know, I've been on the steering committee as a representative from the North Brooklyn branch. I've been on the organizing committee of the North Brooklyn branch as a co-chair. And currently I'm serving my second term as a citywide leadership committee delegate from North Brooklyn.
Can you explain those like organizational functions and those bodies for people
Sure.
who are not as familiar with DSA?
Yeah.
Or maybe know of DSA but not really aware of the internal democratic structures that exist?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So the steering committee is responsible for kind of the day-to-day functioning of the organization. And the steering committee is composed of officers, so there's two co-chairs, secretary, treasurer, membership coordinator, working group coordinator, and then you have representatives from all of the branches. So you have a Queens representative, Bronx Upper Manhattan representative, Lower Manhattan representative, all three Brooklyn branches, North, Central, South. I think soon there's going to be somebody from Staten Island on the committee, And like I said, they keep the lights on, they keep things running. And then separate from that, the next leadership body that's, you know, around that is the Citywide Leadership Committee. The Citywide Leadership Committee is composed of delegates from all of the branches, kind of proportionally decided based on membership numbers within the branch jurisdiction. So that's a body of 35 people, I believe, which also includes the members from the steering committee. And what the Citywide Leadership Committee does is they are the kind of highest decision-making body between conventions. We have conventions annually, usually in the spring. And the convention is, you know, elected delegates from all over, all over the city. Last convention, I believe there were 200 delegates total. And that is the highest decision-making body, which is the only one that has the authority to, you know, amend the Constitution. So most of the big organizational decisions happen at convention, but between the convention, you know, there's still lots of stuff that needs to get done. So that's what happens at the Citywide Leadership Committee. I talked about those leadership bodies, but the working groups are where, like, what DSA does happens. And those are, you know, our issue-based working groups. So you've had on the show before, like, you've had folks from housing come and talk. You've had people from immigration justice come and talk. Those working groups are focused on, you know, specific issues, and they have their own elected leadership within them. At the convention, we didn't do this last convention, but usually the convention before, we had the working groups submit kind of like a task and perspectives document about like what they've been working on and what they're going to be working on. So right now, one of the things we're working on actually within the Citywide Leadership Committee, we have a kind of ad hoc subcommittee that's like working on developing a kind of platform for the organization, to kind of find ways to integrate all of those working groups, because there's a lot of them, and trying to find ways where they can collaborate to kind of strengthen the work that they engage in. So yeah, that's kind of the general overview of the structures.
That was great and very thorough. So like, why is this internal democratic structure so critical for building socialism? Like, what's the relation between that structure and the broader vision and all the work that gets done? Like, how does it give space for people to commit to campaigns that they really care about, since DSA, at the end of the day, is a volunteer-based organization?
Mm-hmm. To me, democracy and democratic socialism, and really, you know, for me, I mean, we could say democratic socialism, to me, like, socialism, by definition, is about democracy. It's about people having control of their lives, you know, economically, politically. We've never had that. So like, it's really important that we have structures in place that like can provide avenues for participation. It used to be, we didn't have a Citywide Leadership Committee, for example, until the 2017 convention, where there was a resolution put forward to create it, because we wanted to have a leadership body that was broader, that was bigger, that could bring in more people from all over the organization. The working groups, and like the way that, you know, anybody can go to a working group meeting and you can run for organizing committee, or you don't have to even be in elected leadership, but you can contribute meaningfully to a working group. Like, to me, it's about, yeah, we have a lot of elections in DSA for leadership positions and whatnot, but democracy is, you know, is about engagement and about being able to direct the course of what you do, of your life, of our actions as an organization. And I think that's why we struggle with it, and we're figuring out, because most people have never had any kind of, you know, control over, you know, the things that they do politically. So I mean, I'm not talking about necessarily prefigurative politics, but I'm talking about like democracy in action. Like, we're going to do things. Let's all talk about how we're going to do them together.
So like something that you're involved in is like base building. Like, what is base building and why is it so important for DSA?
We talk a lot about in the organization about, you know, how are we going to grow DSA? And I think that's important. And we want as many people as possible to join DSA and to like contribute to building this organization. But I think when we talk about base building, you know, as a socialist organization, you know, our interest is in the working class. And for me, that's, you know, everybody that does not, you know, own the means of production. But but within that, there's all sorts of layers and stuff. But if our goal is to have a kind of like working class movement for democracy, for like, you know, control over how we live our lives economically and politically, that's not necessarily going to be about whether or not somebody joins an organization. That's going to be about as many people as possible, you know, I guess fighting for what's theirs. And the way that you do that is you engage with their material means. So like examples from the work that we're doing, you know, in New York City DSA. So our universal rent control campaign, you know, or just in general trying to like strengthen rent regulations. It's a housing crisis in this city. Everybody's getting squeezed out. We want to have some control over people's lives in that regard, where if you're not worrying about, oh man, my rent's about to go up again, I may not be able to live here. Thank God Amazon's not coming, because Amazon would have come to town. Everybody around Long Island City, they'd be priced out. We already saw the people buying up properties over there. Fighting for that is fighting for working class interests or immigrant justice. And the large immigrant community in New York City and fighting for their interests, like, or whether or not, or, you know, for example, like the racial justice working group is doing their school suspensions campaign. You know, if a child can be suspended from school for basically an entire school year, like, what does that do to them? And if we can prevent that kind of thing from happening, you know, what opportunity does that create for that child? This constituency that's going to need to fight for this thing that we want, where is it going to come from and how are we going to constitute it? Often I think, you know, something that socialists talk about, they talk about the working class as though it's just this existent thing, right, that's out there. And all you need to do is kind of put the right words out, the right incantation, and then they'll be summoned forth and then they'll like be victorious. But like, I don't think it's that simple. I think it's very varied and nuanced and diffuse, and building the base is kind of constituting the class through like all of the different struggles that it's engaged in. I talk about it in a different way from like the working class is like this thing that exists, and I talk about is it as this thing that does not yet exist but like can. We've had a lot of different campaigns that we've had over since I've been involved, and not all of them have been winning, but like each one of them have been wins in some degree, because to some degree because you've done some of that work of like constituting that group that's gonna make up that movement. Every time you do that, you're exercising, you're building your muscles, you know, and like over time, you know, we've gotten quite a bit stronger because we keep doing that, because we get into a fight, we might not win it, but we learn from what happened in it, and we take notes, we go back to the drawing board, we get into the next fight with the experience from what we learned before then, and then we keep doing that, and each time we're better, and we've had some successes.
Just want to thank Justin for that really great interview, and we hope to hear from him more. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming at WBAI.org. Today, we're talking about the Democratic part of the Democratic Socialists of America. We're going to be opening up the phone lines in a little bit, but just to get some thoughts going in your head, let us know where in your life do you feel as if there is democracy and where is it lacking. So now we return to our conversation with Bianca and Annie about democracy within DSA. And I think a really critical part of why DSA has ballooned from about like 5,000 members before 2016 to now over 55,000 members is the internal democratic structure that people feel, because we have this sort of, we have this space where people can come in and work on things that they believe in and then have voice and power in the decision-making process, that really encourages people to get involved. So can you describe the DSA structure of internal democracy, Bianca?
Sure. So so the highest decision-making body in the city, besides the convention that happens every year, is something called the Citywide Leadership Committee. This is a group of about 30 people who are democratically elected by the folks in their geographical branches to which they belong. Other than that, we have the administrative committee, or a steering committee rather, that's made up of two co-chairs, a secretary, a working group coordinator, a membership development coordinator, and a treasurer. And then in addition to that, we have one representative for each geographic and or just branch across the city that also sits on the steering committee. Under that, we have each branch, like I said, so it's geographic branches, with the exception of the labor branch, which I talked about earlier. All of them organize and meet autonomously on their own and have their own set of people, or what we call organizing committee, the people who are responsible for facilitating meetings, finding space, maybe, listening to members and like running elections and finding campaigns. And then besides those branches, we have something called working groups, which are usually issue-based. So we have about 22 working groups right now across the city, which speaks to what you said about, being able to plug in almost anywhere when you come in and do the work that you feel like is important to you. And on those working groups, all of them are structured differently, but what we endeavor to do is have them to be, first of all, citywide working groups, which means that they meet in a centrally located spot so that people from all around the city can come if they're interested in this issue, for instance, racial justice. And they'll also have their organizing committee or steering committee or some group of like people who are democratically elected to make sure the working group is functioning in that way.
Thank you for that very thorough and great explanation. Annie, are you still with us?
I am, yeah.
All right, great. Is there anything you want to add to that? And also, like, how does the structure that Bianca just laid out for us relate to the organizing work that you've done?
Bianca gave a perfect explanation of how the structure works. Basically, what it means is anytime you're in a group of people that are, working on something, there is a group of people who are accountable to the members. So that's really helpful, because nobody can just, come in and say, I'm going to make us do XYZ and everybody has to just do what I say. That's not possible in DSA, which is actually really important. I think it's important because, as I said before, when I first, after the election of Trump, I really thought for the first time in my life, like, I don't understand what is possible anymore, and I need to reevaluate what I think is possible. And before that, I had sort of just accepted common, conventional wisdom about what was going to be, whether or not things were going to get passed and elected. And coming to DSA, we reject that sort of approach as well, in that we together collectively build this movement together. So, no one's coming in and saying, all right, we're going to work on this issue happened, or, everybody has to help support this campaign. We get buy-in from our members by building consensus and practicing persuasion and, all coming together to figure out what's the best use of our time. And voting on campaigns and on endorsements and things like that really help focus us while also creating buy-in. So it limits, you know, what we do to specific, you know, things we can all agree on to get behind. You know, we're not going to send 3 people out to every election that happens. We're going to send hundreds of people out to a few really important elections. And I think that helps us make a bigger impact and be stronger. But also just everybody gets to have a voice through these representatives. I mean, we really do make a big priority of giving the opportunity for members to give feedback. So I'm a CLC delegate, and we just had a meeting a couple weeks ago. And before that, all of the branches held what was called like a CLC sort of town hall discussion, where everybody had the opportunity to, in their own branches, discuss the different proposals that we were voting on. We talked about whether or not we should hire a staff person, if we should endorse in the Queens DA race, if we should do stop Amazon, you know, what our plan was for Bernie 2020, all these really important questions. And we gave, you know, we always give the members adequate, you know, ample opportunity to express their thoughts. And that informs the way I vote and the way I collaborate with other people on, you know, on the agenda that we're working on together. So, yeah, I think that it's really important to make people feel like they have some ownership over this collective project, which is really important.
Yeah, both of you guys are in union, so it's a little – the contrast is a little less drastic than with other workplaces. But, you know, a lot – something that I've heard from a lot of DSA members that I've spoken with, especially people who work at nonprofits and they go there hoping to make the world a better place, is that what they encounter is this very hierarchical structure that in the end tends to lead towards – destructive decisions, even if that's not the intention or the stated goal of the organization. So, like, the difference being with DSA that it is democratically run kind of creates a whole different environment and culture. So, like, why is this so important for a socialist organization? And how does democracy enable us to be a big tent organization with a lot of different ideologies and spaces that all agree at the end of the day about coming together and fighting through collective struggle for our goals? If Bianca, if you want to start on that.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I want to say that I'm 100% pro-union. I fought to have a union. I sacrificed a lot to do that, as well as my coworkers. That being said, unions are just not inherently democratic. Like, I don't want people to be under the illusion that because you join a union, hopefully your working conditions, you know, it's proven that they will be better and you will have more opportunities to maybe weigh in and fight for things that you want to fight for. But it's really up to the people themselves to make their unions democratic. And that's so much of why you'll see, DSA pursuing the rank and file strategy. I mean, the whole idea is to reform the labor movement to make it more democratic. So I just want to first say that.
Oh, that's definitely a very critical point.
As far as the way that the NGOs go, I think that, you know, it goes back to, you know, like Annie said, the reason that we can put hundreds of people, on a campaign, on a few campaigns and not 3 people on every one. I think it's like, you know, I get approached by folks on NGO boards and, all the time, and say, oh, you're the co-chair, you're the person to talk to in DSA if I want to get this thing done. And I just want to say, for anybody who's listening, I am not the person to talk to. And there is no such thing as that, because every single thing has to be ran by the CLC, has to have buy-in from a membership. But I think that's one of the reasons why we have so much energy and so much enthusiasm and so much passion, is because we go that extra step to get the buy-in. And we've all agreed on a shared set of facts and a shared set of priorities for the most part. And I think the big tent is another reason why we're so large, is because it's like something that we're all acknowledging, that although we may have different socialist utopian visions, right, or like a vision of what the revolution is or what it might look like, we all know that we have a while to go before we get there. So we our best bet is to work together until it's time for us to part ways. And so I feel like everybody buying into that idea is what makes this organization super special.
Annie, I definitely want to hear your thoughts on this, but first I just wanted to open up the phone lines for the last 10 minutes or so that we have of the show. So if you want to call in, please call in at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. So, Annie, do you have anything to add to what Bianca just said? I thought it was a really great summary of why DSA is been like at this place right now where it's really building power.
Yeah, I agree, Bianca, as always, very well said. I think that, you know, you're right on about how much more energy we get when we have buy-in. Another thing that I think is really cool about this democratic process is that we are forced to engage with each other, like on a pretty large scale. So even though we sometimes have, you know, this idea that DSA is multi-tendency and there's different political perspectives and orientations and, you know, we're all kind of coexisting. One thing I notice is that at things like the CLC meeting, which is kind of like this, the big meeting where we vote and there are contentious issues, I find that the longer we work together and the more we practice democracy, the better our relationships become. You know, the more I get to know people who, whether or not we agree on everything, and the more we practice, you know, the more we realize it really is incumbent upon us to come together and figure out the best way forward, like how to make an amendment even, or a proposal, or a, you know, campaign even better based on what feedback I'm getting from my branch and you're getting from your working group. You know, it helps us create really highly functional relationships. You don't have the opportunity to just say, oh, screw this, you know, person. I don't, you know, I don't really care what they think. I mean, that's not an option because, as Bianca said, like, there is no one person who gets to make these calls. So we're really forced to treat each other with respect and to maintain really positive relationships when, whenever possible. I think we've done a really good job of that in order to function at our, you know, highest capacity.
Like, having these democratic structures kind of creates this democratic culture that then we can bring to the outside, that we can, you know, we're in this world where democracy is so restricted to the ballot box. Maybe some people feel like they can go like sign a petition or something, but democracy is so limited. It's not in your workplace. It's not in your housing. It's not in just the day-to-day of your life. And by having these principles within the organization, it, you know, it's like a practice. It's a training to bringing them outside. Like, the means of creating democracy in DSA are the ends of creating real, true democracy and socialism in action in the real world.
Yeah, and I would just add, too, that, like, I think that last part that you just said is the key. Like, we're not an organization that's obsessed with structures and obsessed with, like, this echo chamber of, like, talking to one another and ourselves, right? But, like, we talk about forming democratic structures and then go out and do the work. And that's the important part, because I think we'd lose so many people if we just wanted to talk about, like, internal democracy. But meeting that with, like, external real campaign work, I think, has been the key in, like, keeping people engaged.
Yeah, if you don't, it can't just be a place where we're like focused only on ideas. That DSA isn't only about let's declare the best form of socialism, and that's what this organization is for, which has kind of crippled a lot of socialist organizations in the past, leads to a lot of infighting and like unproductive engagement. But making it about the work and centering, actually building power in the streets, it gives us an advantage, I think, in the long term for like creating a lasting organization that can work.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, you're live on Revolutions Per Minute. What's your question?
Right, thank you. Just a couple of questions. Why is it narrowed down to two main parties? That's one thing. The other thing is, why is there such a thing as overdue political influence with lobbying? And why is the lobbying based on both houses, people who are no longer in them, but who have had contact with just about everyone that there is to know?
Well, thank you. That's a really great question. In terms of the two-party system, this is like a long historical question, but a lot of it has to do with how the parties in the United States are entrenched in the state system and how they make it extremely difficult to get involved in the electoral process outside. And then also, in terms of just lobbying, I think it comes down to a lot of what we're generally fighting against is that capitalists have the power and the wealth in the society, and they can use that to bend things to their will unless people are collectively organizing and fighting for their own. Either of you have anything to add to that?
I would just say that definitely agree with everything you said about the two-party system. I think under our Big Tent, there are some comrades that envision a future where there are more than two parties, that there's like a mass worker party, and think that it's a good strategy to expose the contradictions in the Democratic Party so that we can break. But that's part of the tent. That's not everyone, but that vision is definitely out there.
Oh, we've got another caller live. You're live on Revolutions Per Minute. What do you got to say?
I'm calling about Treetop Development that's pushing out people out of their apartments. They bought 8 buildings here in Flushing, and it's like 608 units, and they already pushed out 50% of the tenants out of a stabilized building. As you hear, I can hardly talk because for 3 years, ongoing construction, they fixed the apartments, then they tear them apart. There's construction in 21 apartments in this unit, which is 94 units. There's dust everywhere, and we can't get the city to do anything.
Well, thank you for raising awareness for that. It's just seems it's another case of the real estate developers in New York City exercising their immense power over the political and economic system and throwing out working people in favor of raising the exchange value and increasing profits. Annie, do you have anything to add to that? And also, is there anything that you would like to discuss, any events coming up that you would want people to attend?
Yeah, thanks. First of all, yeah, that's a just, you know, infuriating situation to be in when, you know, there's so many instances of capital profit, you know, wealth controlling people's lives to the point of just being destructive beyond words. And and about the lobbying influence, I think DSA is the closest thing I've ever experienced to really having an alternative approach that, you know, they want us to get so discouraged and think, oh, geez, the parties are, you know, both sort of useless and what's the difference? And I totally can relate to that. But I think having a member-oriented, collectively built organization that can sort of address these issues, like, you know, being forced out of apartments or these landlords that are flipping things and making things completely uninhabitable, is the closest thing I felt to hope since the election in 2016. So I hope that folks will check us out if you haven't already. And yes, we actually have a meeting tonight at for the Bronx Upper Manhattan branch. It's at 7 p.m., so in about an hour, at Our Savior's Atonement Church in Washington Heights, which is at 178 Bennett Avenue, and we're going to be voting on bylaws. So that's pretty exciting. If you like democracy, you definitely want to check this out. It'll be a crash course in the most democratic democracy we have.
All right, great. Thanks for spreading the word. Bianca, is there anything that you'd like to share?
Sure. So Racial Justice Working Group really quickly has been working in coalition with a group called Organizing for Equity New York, which is a group of past and present educators and activists who really care about the school suspension problem that we're having in New York City that disproportionately affects Black and Brown students. And so right now, as we presently stand, a student can get suspended for 180 days, which is the full school year. We have, you know, a ton of data that says that that leads to people being entered into the criminal justice system, amongst other things, and we're really trying to end the school-to-prison pipeline. So we've been working, canvassing, writing op-eds, testifying in front of the charter, running canvasses to try to get it reduced to 20 days. We're trying to pressure Mayor de Blasio on this. He has the power to change this. And on March 9th at 12:45, they're going to have a press rally at City Hall and are really asking for all allies to come out and show support for our kids on this issue. We think it's super important. So once again, March 9th, 12:45 at City Hall. If you care about Black and Brown students being suspended and you want to do something about it, show up and let's make some noise.
That sounds like a really crucial campaign to fight against the white supremacy that is constantly being put out by the state and affecting the poorest people who live in our communities. I also just, Justin, wanted to make sure that I shout out the North Brooklyn branch meeting that's happening at 7 p.m. tonight at the Mayday Space at 176 St. Nicholas Ave in Brooklyn. And there's also a Central Brooklyn branch meeting tomorrow night. That's Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Congregational Society. So I just want to thank Annie and Bianca for joining us I thought this was a really amazing discussion about democracy and about building socialism through internal democratic structures. You can follow Revolutions Per Minute at NYCRPM on Twitter. You can also go to NYCDSA on Twitter to check out any updates and events and campaigns that are coming up over the next week or, if you're not going to listen to this again, hopefully you will, months. And we're going to close out again with the beautiful performance of Solidarity Forever. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.